From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds, and we're joined today by Washington Governor Jay Inslee from the White House in Olympia. No, the White House isn't the governor's residence. It's the building where the Capitol Press Corps works, and Governor Inslee is seated where the Northwest News Network's Austin Jenkins usually works. Governor Inslee, thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's 206-543-5869. If you've got a question for the governor, that's 206-543-KUOW. Governor, how messy is Austin Jenkins' desk compared to yours?
It is a paragon of organizational virtue, and I'm quite impressed.
Governor, you visited the Hanford Nuclear Reservation yesterday, and the Department of Energy announced last week that these tanks there, six tanks, maybe leaking 1,000 gallons of radioactive sludge a year. Greta wrote to us. She wants to know, what is your plan for the six leaking tanks at Hanford?
Well, our plan is to insist that the federal government, Department of Energy, exercise all humanly possible technologies to fix this problem. The federal government owes that to the people of the state of Washington, both by law and by ethical responsibility to the people of this state after decades of having this waste within our borders. So I went back and met with Secretary Chu about a week and a half ago and gave him our statement of intent. And the good news is that the department has responded by proposing a plan to stabilize this waste in these six tanks. And actually a few in addition to that, essentially it's a grouting process where it's mixed with grout. It turns to a concrete-like material. And then ship that material to the WIP site, the waste depository in New Mexico. And the reason they have done this, and the reason I think it makes sense to do this, is that this is the fastest, most efficient thing to do with these tanks. The problem is that there's no technology that can actually either find the leaks in these tanks, which are well past their useful life, nor repair them. So the only solution to this problem is to remove that waste and remove that from the state of Washington. So we think this is the most manageable plan. And unfortunately, this cannot be done in days or weeks. It's going to be a multi-year process. And we are going to continue to hold the federal government's feet to the fire to get this job done as quickly as possible.
Are people in harm's way now because of this leaking radioactive sludge?
No, there is no imminent threat to public health. And that's important for people to realize. And neither is there any threat to our food supply and our agricultural industry. And that's important for people to know. We want to sell our wine and wheat and potatoes around the world, and people need to know this is not a threat. And the reason is that this is a material that moves quite slowly and would take years, if not decades, to reach the water table. So there's no imminent danger in the vicinity. However, this is simply unacceptable to have radioactive waste that would ever reach groundwater or has any chance of getting to the Columbia River. So that is why we have taken a zero tolerance policy, that we're just not going to have any acceptable leakage that we will allow in the state of Washington without remedial action. So I think we're taking the right approach. And, I'm very disappointed by this. This is material that was supposed to have been stabilized years ago when liquid was drained from these tanks. And so we're going to be insistent to get this job done. And as far as the transportation, this is material that it's called TRU, T-R-U. It's a particular classification of waste. It is not the high-level waste a lot of people visualize when they think of radioactive waste. The high-level waste is material that will be vitrified. It will be turned into glass and eventually removed to an eventual repository outside the state of Washington. This is a lower-level material. It's much less radioactive, and it's a type of material that has historically gone to New Mexico, a fairly similar type of material. So this is I look at this as a continuation of a policy we've already had to move this, what's called TRU waste, which is a lower-level radioactive material, to New Mexico, and I don't think that it's something people should worry about on a transportation basis either.
Well, Governor Meredith is worried about it. She says she thinks that believes that Hanford doesn't have the capacity to safely prepare this waste for shipment to New Mexico. Is that true?
Well, we're going to get to the bottom of that to make sure that we do have a high confidence, and we have not that in fact the shipment preparations are adequate. We have not been shown the details of this. There is one site in the Tri-Cities that actually does this stabilization work and this grouting work before permits are issued and before, in fact, shipments leave. I will be personally involved, as will my Department of Ecology, to assure that we have the highest level of security. From the information I have today, if I lived and was raising my grandchildren in Tri-Cities and knew those trucks would be going by my house, I just telling you personally, I would not have significant concerns about that, assuming we do this the right way, and we're going to make sure we do it that way.
Governor Jay Inslee is my guest. We're at 206-543-KUOW. If you have a question that you'd like to ask to the governor, Governor, as you know, a recent poll showed a strong opposition to an increase in the gas tax, which is being proposed in the legislature. Will you sign an increase in the gas tax if it reaches your desk?
Well, what I think we need to do is Republicans and Democrats need to work together to find the most tenable, fairest, most efficient way to solve our transportation challenges. And as you know, I've intent to wake up every single morning for the next few years committed to creating jobs in this state. And in order to create these jobs, we know we have to take steps in transportation. And I'll tell you why. I'll just give you an example of why moving forward in transportation is important. In the next several years, Boeing will be making a decision where to build the replacement for the Boeing 777. And when it comes time for that company to decide where to go, South Carolina, China, the state of Washington, it is very important that we demonstrate progress in reducing both the wait time for people to get to work and an opportunity to have decent freight mobility to be able to move engines and aluminum and everything and carbon fiber around our state. So in order to preserve and protect our ability to grow jobs, we really do need to respond to the fact that 1 million more people are moving to our state, and yet we're not having one square inch new real estate. So we know we have to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of our transportation corridors to move more people per mile. Now, to do that, you know, there is a tooth fairy, but there is no transportation fairy. We're going to have to find a way to finance these projects, the 520 Bridge, which is not fully financed, the Highway 167 in Pierce County, the Columbia River Crossing, which is an issue of national importance across the Columbia River Bridge, and also maintain this. So we've got to find a way to finance these. And what I'm doing is not taking any financing mechanism off the table. I'll be working with Republicans and Democrats in the legislature to try to find a way forward in this regard. It is a jobs issue in our state, and I'll look forward to working with everybody to find the right package.
If that involves more revenue, say a gas tax, which is, as far as I know, the only proposal out there to increase revenue to pay for these things that you say are very important, do you think that should go to the voters?
Well, my view is legislators and governors get a job. It's a good job. You get paid regularly. It's indoor work. And you ought to be prepared to make tough decisions, and you ought to be required to step up to the plate and exercise leadership. And that's to fashion a transportation package, R's and D's alike, that is both fair and efficient. And yeah, these are tough decisions, but we ought to have legislators and governors with the gumption to make these decisions and pass these bills. And if other people want to put them on the ballot, they have the right to do that. But I would expect legislators to try to fashion this passion, pass it, do the work that legislators are paid to do and governors are paid to do as well. We ought to take that responsibility on our shoulders and not duck it.
If a gas tax is approved, I think it raises about $10 billion, this proposal that's out now. But the State Transportation Commission has estimated that the needs for the state over the next 20 years could be as much as $200 billion. That's 20 times as much. Even if we do get more revenue through a gas tax, aren't we still falling behind in paying for our transportation needs?
You know, I really don't share their assessment of what a reasonable approach to our transportation needs are. And no matter what you do, someone is always going to say there's another project that eventually we'll have to fund. I don't believe that's an excuse for inaction. There are things that we know have to be done in the near future. I'll give you an example. The Columbia River Bridge proposal today, if we move forward this year to finance it, we will receive $850 million of federal money at no cost to the taxpayers of the state of Washington. Unfortunately, if we do not act this year, there is a significant risk that $850 million will disappear next year and never be available to us again. And if that happens, that means that we in Washington will end up picking up that $850 million tab on the shoulders of the taxpayers in our state. That's just one of the reasons we need to show a dedication to getting this job done this year. We know that we're in a favorable environment right now to get contracts. The bids are coming in pretty low. We know costs will go up over the long term. We know we're going to have to finish the 520 bridge. We're not going to have half a bridge. And it doesn't make sense to delay the costs and see those costs escalate as we move forward. And as I've said, you know, we got some decisions that big companies are going to be making in the near future about whether to build, you know, new buildings here and new industries. I think this is the right moment to move forward, not forgetting the jobs it's going to create in these construction projects as well.
Governor Inslee, the state Supreme Court has ruled that the citizen-approved initiative that requires a two-thirds vote of the legislature to raise taxes is unconstitutional. But we do also know that voters approved this measure three times, most recently last fall. Would you sign into law a tax increase that did not get a supermajority, a two-thirds vote in the legislature, given the clearly stated public sentiment that that be the case, even though legally that can happen?
Well, if these were equitable, if they were efficient, if they were in fact necessary, and if we've done the things to get as much as we possibly can to squeeze as much product and service from every single one of the dollars of the taxpayer dollars, and it fulfills a necessary requirement, for instance, the constitutional requirement that now we've been ordered by the Supreme Court to come up with several billion dollars of new school funding, if it's necessary to do those things, I think we should follow basic tenets of democracy as originally set out by Alexander Hamilton and James Madison and the group that of brilliant people who created American democracy. And they believed, and I believe, that we make decisions based on majorities. And in fact, I was reading some quotes by Alexander Hamilton the other day about the fact that if you allow the tyranny of the minority to stop the majority will, you really won't have a functioning democracy. So I agree with the wiser people than me who established the democratic experiment in 1776 that we have majority decision-making in this state. And it's a democratic principle that I embrace, and it's a rock I'm standing upon. I may also add that this is a principle, too, that is one based on equality. You know, I represent 6.5 million people. And every single one of them, in my views, are equal. Every single one of them ought to be able to exercise their franchise, their vote, and all of those votes ought to count the same. And when you create a supermajority requirement, if you do the math, it basically gives one vote to the man or woman who wants to build a school in their town, but gives 1.5 votes to the person who doesn't want to build a school and finance the school. I just believe in equality, fairness, and democracy, and that's the way I think our state foundation is built upon.
Governor Inslee, Evelyn writes to us at conversation@kuow.org to ask, do you support abolishing the death penalty in our state?
You know, I've supported capital punishment in narrowly defined circumstances. That's been my history. I haven't seen a change right now, but I believe you said it's Evelyn. I'd be happy to talk to her at some time about it.
According to our Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, we have the possibility of an execution in our state as soon as this summer or next fall. It'd be the first since 2010. Is clemency something you would consider as governor?
Well, clemency is both a responsibility and something on occasion governors are called upon to exercise. I would certainly not rule out the use of clemency powers. It can be used in the appropriate circumstances. I would be very judicious and careful in reviewing any petition in that regard, and I'll look at them one at a time.
You have urged the legislature to pass Medicaid expansion. Senate leaders have not yet done that. They say it will be part of budget negotiations down the road. Why the urgency?
Well, I think this is something that we all ought to embrace, and the earlier we do it, the better. This is a no-brainer. Republican governors, even Chris Christie, who has been very vocal on this, has embraced Medicaid expansion. And the reason Republican governors have done this is you can't fashion an excuse not to do it from a fiscal standpoint. The federal government will be picking up 100% of these costs. Even when that goes down to 90%, it is a pure winner for the state of Washington. And the reason is that it removes a tax obligation from the shoulders of people in the state of Washington and puts it on the federal government. You cannot fashion a fiscal reason not to do this. And even people who spoke against health care reform, even people who believe that President Obama was born in Kenya, they have reached the conclusion that this just makes sense to do. So I know that we are eventually going to get to that position. I know that my Republican colleagues know in the back of their minds we're going to get to this position. What we do not want to allow is them somehow using yesterday's arguments as sort of a bargaining chip to try to wheedle some other, you know, regressive policy in the state of Washington. We are not going to allow that to happen because we know this is going to happen. So what I guess I'm saying to my Republican colleagues, you know, the jig is up. This is not something we ought to be arguing about. It's something we both know we're going to embrace in the eventual budget. And the sooner we do that, the more we'll get to an honest discussion to try to find a bipartisan consensus in a very, very difficult time. And this is a difficult time. And it's one of the reasons I'm doing so much outreach to both Republicans and Democrats, talking to them individually to seeing what their ideas are and how we fashion a solution. But nobody has shown me a way to fashion a solution without embracing this fiscal winner for the state of Washington in Medicaid expansion.
Governor, if the legislature does not pass Medicaid expansion, how important is it to you? Would you call them back into special session to get action on this, or would you just wait until the next legislative session?
This is something we need to do this year. There's no reason for inaction except trying to fight old battles. You know, I think the country needed to get over the Civil War in the 1860s, and we need to get over the fact that, you know, the people have spoken and this law has passed, and my Republican colleagues, who I know are sincere in their beliefs, they need to get over the fact that we've had this battle, we've had this argument, it's resolved. Let's put that one behind us. Let's work together to go to some other mutual challenges. If we do that, I'm confident we will do this. I'm very confident this will get done. So I think this is one of these hypotheticals we're not going to have to worry about. This is going to get done this year. I'm confident of it.
Jeremy has this question. The plan for implementing legal cannabis production won't be in place until August. So that would it would rely on indoor production methods. That's going to create a much larger carbon footprint than if the marijuana could be grown outdoors. Jeremy wants to know if you've considered the effects of cannabis production on the state's carbon emissions, particularly if it doesn't get started until August after the growing season's over.
Well, I have to applaud that question. I applaud anyone who's thinking about carbon emissions on every scope. And this is one I have not thought about. So I owe lunch to him for thinking about this issue. I honestly have not thought about that issue. I think there's some security issues. These rules have not been promulgated. I'll be working with the Liquor Control Board as we move forward on that. They've sort of finished the public testimony part of this now. So now we need to get down to brass tacks to figure out the rules. It does strike me as that there's some reason from a security standpoint to have indoor production. I haven't looked at the specifics of that or whether there's a reason not to do that. But I think it is important, and this is important in our discussion with the federal government. I have done my utmost best to convince the administration that we will do everything humanly possible to not allow Washington to become an export center. We want to convince the federal government that this is a local decision with local impacts by a group of people in the state of Washington who've made a decision, and we ought to respect that voter's intent. But at the same time, I think it's important for us to convince the federal government so that they will not exercise efforts to stop this exercise in federalism and democracy in our state. And so I think that it makes sense if, in fact, indoor growing requirements helps them to reach that conclusion. That would be a good thing.
Jeremy, you heard the governor. Call his office to arrange that luncheon. Governor Inslee, there's a bill in the legislature to regulate drones, and it would define when they could be used. It would require approval of the local legislature, the city council, before they're used. It would limit the ability of drones to collect and store personal information. Now, the Boeing company is opposing this. They're concerned it's going to hurt the state's chances to be one of six Federal Aviation Administration sites around the country that can test the drones. Do you support the bill, or do you oppose it?
You know, I haven't seen that bill, so I can't tell you a yay or nay on it. I think there are clearly very legitimate reasons to use some of this aircraft in a legitimate way where we'd find broad consensus. I think there are also, frankly, some rational concerns of people on privacy issues. I hope we can accommodate both of those. I don't know if this is the right vehicle to do that or not. So I'll be looking at this in detail. I think this is one we ought to be able to fashion some response that does understand you can use these in emergency situations where they would be important. You know, as wide as, for instance, I heard even somebody propose an avalanche control the other day. But I've also seen these things and don't want them hovering around 6 inches from my forehead. It was funny. My first experience with them, I was on the tribal canoe journey. I paddled on the last leg with the Nisqually tribe in their dugout canoe for the last 12 miles into Olympia last summer. And the canoe journey was being broadcast by a national network. And one of these helicopters with four rotaries came up and, you know, hovered about 20 feet in front of our foreheads and just sat there showing us on national television. It was frankly kind of a disconcerting feeling. So I'm sensitive to that. So I'll try to work forward to accommodate both these important issues.
We're going to let Bill in Shelton have the last word. He's got a question about a concern of yours, and that's the impact of greenhouse gases. Bill, go right ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Governor.
Hi.
I really appreciate your leadership on climate issues, and in particular ocean acidification. I'm a shellfish grower, and as you know, we're having real problems producing oyster seed due to the corrosive seawater that's upwelling off Washington's coast, dissolving the shells of our babies.
Is this Bill Taylor?
What's that?
Is this Bill Taylor?
Yeah, it's Bill Dewey.
Oh, Bill Dewey. Yes, I'm sorry, Bill.
Governor, can you tell us what measures you plan to take to help Washington address the impacts of ocean acidification?
Bill, I appreciate your leadership on this issue. It is so important for not only the shellfish industry, but for so many industries in our state. You know, you're the canary in the coal mine. The new canary in the coal mine is the oyster in Willapa Bay. And the reason is, as you know, we've had to consider moving some of these operations because of the acidic conditions in our water. It is the evil twin of climate change, and it doesn't get talked nearly enough about it. And I'm really glad you've made this call so we can take a moment to chat about it. What has happened, as you know, is that all of the megatons of carbon dioxide we put in the atmosphere from burning coal and oil over the decades ends up going into much of its solution into the water and create acidic conditions in the water. And the oceans of the planet today are 30% more acidic than they were when Vancouver dropped his hook off Bainbridge Island. I think it was 1782 or 92. And so this is it really is an international crisis, and it's hit home in our state perhaps faster than anywhere else in the world because we have some of these upwelling events of old acidic water off our coastline. So this is a real tip of the iceberg of an enormous problem that we're going to face across the planet. But it's hit home first in the state of Washington. But the reason I appreciate your call is it's not just the shellfish industry. It's the timber products industry where we've had thousands of acres of beetle kill and forest fires, which are going to perhaps double in the next decade and a half as a result of its associated problem of climate change. It's water issues where our wine industry has huge potential growth. We might be able to double our wine production in the next decade, but we can't if we lose snowpack and we can't irrigate those crops. So this is a bell in the night telling us we've got to take action to deal with this problem. So I have many things that I've proposed to deal with this, from energy efficiency to increase research dollars to try to use the creative minds to create new sources of energy, from solar energy to offshore wind energy to advanced forms of energy storage. We've got one of the leading companies in the world today in Spokane with a copper sulfate battery. They're selling a product in China today. The sky's the limit in our ability to create new energy products to grow jobs at the same time we reduce ocean acidification. But we have to give Washingtonians the tools to finish this job. In 2008, the state legislature passed a law that promised and a mandate and a limit on the amount of these gases that create ocean acidification. But since then, they haven't created any tools to help Washingtonians actually fulfill that limitation. So I have a bill I've introduced both in the House and Senate, which will create a bipartisan group to work together to fashion the tools to finish that job. And the reason I've done it this way is that, hey, we need all hands on deck to create the tools to limit these ocean acidification gases. And I'm calling on Republicans and Democrats to come to the table to offer a solution. You know, the day's over when anybody ought to be able arguing about the science on this. We're way, way past any scientific arguments. We need Republicans to step up the plate now and say, come to the table, help us fashion the tools to finish that job. And there's a lot of them that we should be considering. My bill calls for us to look at all of the policies that have had success or lack of success in all the states and all the countries of the world to find out the ones we want to put to work here in the state of Washington. And I'm going to be welcome to all ideas in that regard. This is of the most fundamental responsibility. And I just want to say one thing in closing. Somebody asked me the other day, I testified in the House hearing, you know, why we should do this. Why should Washington do this when, you know, maybe Bangladesh has not acted yet? And the reason is because that's who we are. We are leaders. You know, we didn't wait for, you know, England for democracy. We created it here. We didn't wait for Germany to develop a commercial jet liner. We did it here at the Boeing 707. We're leaders. That's who we are as a state. And we have a moral imperative and an ethical obligation to our grandkids. And we all have that obligation. We're less than 1% of the world's emissions, but we are 100% responsible for our own moral conduct. And the moral thing to do here is to not allow our grandkids to live in a Washington that doesn't have oysters. And we're heading in that direction if we don't do something. So thanks for your call.
Bill, thanks a lot for your phone call. And on that rousing note, we'll finish this off. Governor, thank you so much for coming over from the state capitol to the White House, the press building. And it's also a moral imperative not to leave a mess on Austin Jenkins' desk. So if you could clean that up, that would be great too.
It's one of my campaign promises. Thanks a lot.
Governor Jay Inslee. I'm Ross Reynolds. This is The Conversation.